Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show, the Political Cesspool radio program. Second hour now upon us. It's Saturday evening, March 17th, and I'm coming to you live tonight from just outside of Nashville, Tennessee, at the American Renaissance 2012 conference. We're going out, of course, to our flagship radio station. We're just not broadcasting from there tonight, but AM 1380 WLRM Radio, our home away from home. And, of course, to all of the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, we are simulcasting online right now to a worldwide audience at thepoliticalcesspool.org, where just a few minutes after tonight's live broadcast, like every other show we've done since 2004, the broadcast archive will be available free of charge for you to listen to again, or if you're listening live right now for the first time at your convenience. And, of course, I want to give a plug to the Council of Conservative Citizens online chat room, the Political Cesspool Virtual Fan Party, which is going on right now at cfcc.org. If I was at home in the familiar surroundings of the radio station, I would be in there with you all tonight, unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately, but I can't tonight for obvious reasons. I'm up here and meeting a lot of good people, like the young man that is on the line with me right now. Had the opportunity to meet him for the first time this afternoon, one of the many great faces in the crowd. Jason has been with us at the American Renaissance Conference. Jason, are you there?
I am, James. Can you hear me?
I can hear you clear. Great to have you back. I enjoyed a good talk with you a little earlier in the afternoon. Now, is this your first conference to come to?
It is indeed. I actually signed up for the last two. However, as you know, those were both canceled. The first one was scheduled to take place in D.C. and last year is in Charlotte. So this is, in fact, my first conference.
So third time was the charm for you as far as that goes.
Exactly right.
Well, good enough, good enough. And so, again, so this is your first-time observer here. What's your take on everything so far? Keith Alexander and I certainly offered at length our assessment during the first hour for the entirety of it. This is your first time, though. What do you make of it?
Well, first of all, I think it's just great to be here. I mean, having missed out on the first two due to unforeseen circumstances, it's just nice to be around all these good people and hear some really respected and some big-time thinkers within the movement. As far as today's speakers go, I really was most impressed by Alex Kurdigich.
Right.
He had a real, I think, fiery speech in the morning. It was very well-worded, really a call to action, and I think he probably got the best rise out of the crowd. It definitely moved me the most. And I would also say that, Richard Lynn, obviously it was an extreme honor to hear him speak and be in his presence. Him and Mr. Donald Templer, I think, really provided sort of the backbone with a lot of the hard facts and statistics, really supplemented the Kurdigich and the Jared Taylor remarks as well as your own.
Yeah, I got to echo your comments. Well, about everyone, obviously, but Alex Kurdigich, what a master wordsmith. If you haven't read his book yet, it's great. And he actually wrote me in as the governor of Tennessee in that excellent novel, Mister. And I heard him speak, I guess for the first time, in Washington last year. We were talking about the NPI conference a few minutes ago, and it really blew me away. And I've seen a lot of speeches over the years, but Alex is definitely one of the best of the best, and he woke everybody up bright and early this morning. He was one of the first speakers on the docket. So, but let me ask you the most important question. You're one of the rare people like me who brings our better half to these things. How's your girlfriend enjoying the experience?
Oh, she's really enjoying it. She's not totally, I would say, as involved as I am, but I'm bringing her along, and she's been very supportive coming down here with me, and I'm just thrilled to be here with her and enjoying the experience.
Certainly a good trooper doing her part, and it was great to meet her today as well. And you certainly had an interesting story about we all have a story how we were able to develop our opinions and what led us into this particular political arena. You had a story more tragic than most. How did it start?
Sure. Well, you could say it's tragic, but in the end, it's worked out all right for me. Actually, the way it started is, I grew up in a very, I'd say, racially homogeneous area of New York. mostly all around white people. I think there was maybe one or two non-whites in my graduating class of about 250. But when I was attending college in Pennsylvania, I happened to be the victim of a very violent crime. I actually was shot after being robbed with one of my schoolmates there. And after that happened, it sort of took me a little while to, I guess, process everything. And maybe about a year or so later, I started to pick up on, you know, some of the reasons behind what happened to me. And the actual incident that spurred my awakening, as I would call it, was I was watching a film by Michael Moore called Bowling for Columbine.
Right.
And in that film, he tries to discover some of the reasons behind the high levels of gun violence in the United States. And there was something that he said in there about the racial makeup of the United States versus Canada. And it didn't seem quite right to me, so I looked it up on the internet, and I had found out that, in fact, he wasn't telling the truth in his so-called documentary. And, you know, after I found that, I was obviously very shocked, and I started to do some more research on the internet. And eventually I came upon American Renaissance, which was really the first website or exposure that I had to the, you know, race realist movement. And I guess you could say things just took off from there. I mean, that was about 3 or 4 years ago, and, you know, I've followed AR ever since, and you know, I've met some really fascinating people within the movement, but, you know, never the likes of the people that I've encountered down here in Nashville. It's really been a great pleasure to be around all these wonderful people, including yourself.
Yeah, and that is... You know, your story is a horrible manifestation of a multicultural society, and that's not to say, obviously, that all non-whites engage in that behavior. In fact, most of them don't. But when you look at it, there is a disproportionate amount of crimes committed based upon their percentage of the population, and in your case, it was a violent crime. Do you think you would have begun to develop your right way of thinking had it not been for that bullet?
Well, you know, I think it's hard to say. I'm certain that it would have taken me a lot longer and perhaps a different traumatic experience or, you know, experience that hit close to home to either me or one of my family members or friends, you know, to get me moving in the right direction. But obviously, if you look at my upbringing, I've noticed that a lot of the key ingredients to this movement tend to hail from places in the South that are more racially diverse, and being that I grew up in the Northeast, which is a relatively white part of the country, I mean, no, I don't think, I think it's pretty clear that...
You don't get to experience the multicultural utopia. You don't know the reality of it. The only thing you know is what you see on TV if you live in a racially homogenous area. And,
right.
And so, you know, that certainly makes sense. And anyway, an interesting story, you listen to this young man speaking, ladies and gentlemen, and you would think that he would have been a speaker himself, and rightly deserved it would have been. This is the caliber of the audience. Stay tuned. Hang on the line, Jason. We're coming up on a break. I want to say goodbye to you on the other end. Stick with us right through the commercial.
Okay, sure thing.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center. Where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0-degree sleeping bag. This comfortable family-sized sleeping bag can hold 2 adults and 1 child or 4 young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Large cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
When the truth is found.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
I just wanted to keep Jason over with us through the commercial break. Thank him once again for coming on. Jason, great pleasure to meet you tonight. And I'm looking at my schedule right now. It looks like the banquet is about to begin. Great speaker from France. You're going to really enjoy that, and I look forward to hopefully catching up with you a little later on this evening after the radio program.
Indeed. I'll head down there now, and thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a real honor.
No problem. The pleasure's all ours. Ladies and gentlemen,
bye-bye.
That was, again, Jason, young man we met here at the conference today, and you could just tell by the way he spoke. This is the kind of caliber. This was Exhibit A, proving the case that Keith and I were making in the first hour, just the high caliber of the people in attendance of this conference. It's absolutely outstanding, and they were all that well-spoken. They were all that squared away. This gentleman just happened to be a younger guy, a guy from my generation, a little bit younger than me. And from there all the way up to some of the elder statesmen, it's just been great people, great fellowship. And again, such an honor it was to be able to address this audience. And with that being said, I'd like to share with you now, and we'll have to do this in segments, of course, because I'm not going to be able to have 30 continuous minutes here on the radio with the commercial breaks, but we're going to do the best we can here. A winning mindset for effective advocacy. When Jared Taylor approached me last year, that's what he wanted me to talk about. And what an honor to be able to address this conference, which I believe is the premier event in the cause of European-American advocacy. Such an honor to be here among colleagues and friends, and new friends, like Jason, who we just heard. I told the audience at the beginning of my remarks, though, that I had no silver bullet. If those in attendance came here today to hear me or any of the other speakers write out the prescription of how we can cure what ails America, that's an unrealistic expectation. Certainly, even if we did have the answer, I mean, we would certainly share it with everyone, but implementing the plan would be even more problematic. So I don't think anyone came here today for a quick fix. So I told them the best I could offer them was a short presentation on what I've done that's been effective and offer them a little practical advice that everyone can apply in their daily lives. And as I said, when Jared approached me last year, it was around last October, I believe, about speaking here today, he suggested that I talk about how I appeal to the mainstream here on the radio and about how I stay positive and professional while at the same time coming across as a quote-unquote normal guy. And listen, normalcy cannot be discounted. I mean, let's face it. You meet a lot of people, and they're in all walks of life, all across the political spectrum. But if you're in the public eye long enough, you know that not everybody out there that you encounter is normal. In fact, there's a lot of weird people in the world. People who are overly intellectual and socially awkward, or perhaps just angry and bitter about the state of affairs that America is now in. And frankly, I'm neither. I'm not all that smart, and I'm certainly almost always in a good mood. So here I was today addressing the crowd, and I am often called positive by many folks who talk with me and email with me, and I take that for the high compliment that they intended to be. And God knows I've been called a lot worse than normal and positive. And despite the odds that we face, I have no illusions about our current situation, but still, though, I tend to do my work with a sunny disposition. I think it stems from the spiritual affirmation that comes with doing one's duty. As Robert E. Lee said, duty is the most sublime word in the English language. We should all do our duty. You can never do more. You should never wish to do less. And I'm happy to do my duty. But when I'm asked what it is that we do that makes the political cesspool so popular, or relatively popular, I find myself in the same position as the centipede who was asked by the grasshopper how he kept all of his feet synchronized. The centipede thought about the question for a moment, and then he could never walk again. And I fear that an analysis of my work here on the radio airwaves might result in a similar paralysis. I don't know why it is that we've been able to stick around for so long. I mean, I can certainly give you a few ideas, but the fact of the matter is I just do what I do, and the chips fall where they may, and so far it's worked out pretty good for us. I'm proud to say, I'm happy to say, that for whatever reason or for whatever number of reasons, the political cesspool has a large audience, and it seems to be growing. I've been on the AM and FM airwaves for 8 years now. It'll be 8 years this fall. And, of course, thanks to Sam Bushman and the Liberty News Radio Network and our friends, we became a syndicated broadcast a few years back, and, you know, the rest is history. You take the sum of all of its parts, and you look at the show over the course of time that we've been on the air, and during that run thus far, we've been covered by over 150 newspapers, various magazines, television programs. I was a contributor for CNN for a time there, making regular appearances. All that has helped us develop a reputation that I would never trade. And even though not one of those articles or newspaper magazine blurbs or even the television programs, even though none of them have ever really contained an ounce of honesty about what we really do here, the publicity, even the sometimes negative publicity that they give us, does bring into the fold the curious observer. And those with brains that work are able to come here, listen to the radio show, read what we have to say in our own words, and make up their own mind as to what we're all about. Are we really, you know, these evil so-called racists, so-called this, that, and the other? Or do we do everything that we do out of a love for our own people and our own culture and our own heritage? And I think people with an objective mind, they come and they look at what we're doing, they look at our portfolio, and they say, you know what, these guys are just out doing what everybody else is able to do, and take for granted, and there's nothing wrong with that. Some folks tell me that they're amazed that a Memphis-based show like ours is able to survive at all, with Memphis now being unquestionably one of the most white-hating places in America. But maybe that explains why we have been such a success in Memphis. We're the only media for the dispossessed majority in our city. And with charisma, maybe a little magnetism and panache, we present our case to the everyday man on the street that we're going to have to enlist in the struggle to reclaim America's destiny. We're going to have the populists. We don't do it alone, that's for sure. I mean, certainly myself and Keith and Bill and Winston and Eddie and the staff and crew here in Memphis and with the network, we do our part. We cover the news. It's not always good news, but we cover it, and we offer you commentary from a paleo-conservative perspective, and we do the best job that we can, but we don't do it alone. This radio program, in some circles, is very famous for the guests that we feature, people like Jared Taylor, Pat Buchanan, Dr. Kevin McDonald, Richard Spencer, Frank Borzilleri, who was here today, and so many others. You look at our portfolio, we certainly cater to a certain crowd, and the audience has breathed life into our work. The guests who appear on the show have accentuated it, and it's working. You know, we're able, to the extent that we can, to make our issues fashionable again. Because the general public isn't going to back something that isn't in vogue. And so by being on the mainstream airwaves, by being on the legitimate AM and FM dials, we're able to offer these things up in a very establishment way. And I think that's been very attractive and something that certainly has built the show. I think if we were an internet-only broadcast, we wouldn't have stood the test of time. But being on these airwaves is something that makes us very unique. And I'm very proud about that. I'm going to talk more about that. I'm going to continue on there right after these words from our break, continuing to recap my speech here delivered today at the Ameren Conference live on the air tonight. Stay tuned.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin, just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Are you looking for literature from authors who aren't ashamed of their European-American heritage? Are you looking for books that don't shy away from the forbidden facts? You used to look all over the internet for these books, but you can now find them all at the same place, lighthouseliterature.com. Whether you're looking for rare classics from the great thinkers or the latest and most popular books from guys like me, Lighthouse Literature is your trusted source for the best books at the best prices. For a limited time, you can get my new book, Racism Schmacism, from Lighthouse Literature for only $10. When you make a purchase from www.lighthouseliterature.com, you're helping support dedicated real-world advocates and activists. So, what are you waiting for? Surf on over to lighthouseliterature.com. A bright light for the right.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
They don't cry. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. Big
girls don't cry. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. And picking up where I left off there and in my remarks today, I shared with the audience that I can vividly remember back in the early days of the show. Keep in mind, we kicked this whole thing off back in October of 2004. And I can remember during the first few months, year and a half, conducting what we called waiting in line market research. Now, this was something that was primarily done by Winston Smith, again, during the early days of our run. But what it would consist of is that while we would stand in line at a store, if Winston and I were out together or sat in a busy diner, he would talk about the show. And he would talk about the show so loudly that people in the immediate area would have no choice but to hear him. And then he would ask a nearby person, "Have you ever listened to those guys?" Talking about us. And keep in mind, this was during the early days, and this is radio, not television, so we certainly weren't too recognizable, especially back then. But more often than not, and this is the truth, not only were the random bystanders familiar with the show, but they carried a favorable opinion of our work. These were the same kinds of people, roofers with mortgages, who helped us chase Al Sharpton out of town when he was in town to rename the three Confederate parks in Memphis. And this, of course, was the thing that led us to our first claim to fame back in 2006. And I think these types of people, the people that we would run into in those situations, the people that came together with us at the Confederate Park vigil that we held, you know, a crowd that outnumbered that which Al Sharpton was able to draw. These were the same kinds of people who hold the key to effective advocacy for European Americans. And I firmly believe that most European Americans, particularly those in the red states, the southern states, the midwestern states, they fundamentally think like we do, even on the taboo issues. Now, again, I'm in a fortunate and a unique position to where I receive dozens of letters and emails each week from people who affirm my assessment. But I don't think that it's naive to trust that most normal working class folks know what's wrong with this country, and they know the real problem. What they don't know is what they can do about it. Indeed, they don't know if there's anything they can do about it. For most of us, life is somewhat of a burden. We have families to support, and we work our jobs to support them. That's not a burden. Again, that's a duty, and it's an honor, but it is time-consuming. We have to work to support those who don't work. We have homes to maintain, yards to cut, children to raise, spouses who need and deserve our attention, and a hundred of other cares and concerns that prevent us from marching en masse when legislators pass laws that work to decrease the influence of the dispossessed majority. And naturally, we're too civilized, rightly so, too law-abiding to start riots when a white girl is kidnapped, raped, tortured, and murdered by diversity. And besides, you know, and I had a chance to talk about that on CNN one time. You know, the gruesome double murder, rape, torture of Channing Christian and Christopher Newsom happened right down the road in Knoxville, Tennessee. Had the chance to go on to be an advocate for them on the Paula Zahn show at the time. But above all of the most heinous stuff, we're just at the point in which it's financially dangerous to speak out and act on behalf of our people. Just ask Pat Buchanan, you know, and Jared Taylor. These folks and many others have been victims of what I call economic terrorism at the urging of people who hate white people. And for the average workaday white person, it's a huge intimidation factor. They think if Pat Buchanan can be fired for speaking frankly about certain issues, then so can I. So for most European Americans, visible activism and advocacy is simply out of the question for now. But still, they want to do something on behalf of their extended family. And pardon me for once again stating the obvious, but other ethnic groups have their advocacy and pressure groups. They're everywhere. They're visible, their belligerence is applauded and encouraged, they're well-funded, and they're entrenched. But groups that work on behalf of the interests of European Americans are just plain scarce. It might not be that difficult for those of us who do exist to get exposure, but national media coverage that accurately portrays our views and activities is a dream. There's no money in this movement. As I mentioned, we've been operating for nearly a decade and have enjoyed more celebrity than most, but we still have a very razor-thin operating budget. As organizations, we're constantly fighting for our basic rights to exist and to operate. This American Renaissance Conference, as people have said before, had been shut down twice because of lawless thugs advocating violence against the facilities that would allow us to express our freedom of speech and association. These hateful and dishonest people who do not want us to exist and do not want organizations who speak out on our behalf to exist were successful for 2 years in a row in shutting down and violating Jared Taylor's civil rights and constitutional rights to be able to rent a room and get together and talk about issues in a very polite and lawful way. And if it were not for the fierce defiance and determination and leadership of Jared Taylor and his staff, we wouldn't be here today, at least not here in Nashville and at this conference. When polite and aware folks think of the individual and organizational leadership of this type of advocacy, you'd be lucky to employ all of your fingers and toes. There's just not very many of us. We're fighting a very difficult uphill battle, and the hill is very steep and very slippery. If advocating for European Americans was simply a matter of common sense and truth and powerful communication, then there's no doubt that our side would have won the battle and indeed the war a long, long time ago. And as I looked out over the crowd today when I was giving my speech, I truly saw, and we've talked about this at great length already, I saw the deepest thinkers, the most honest and clear-sighted observers, and the most eloquent and elegant communicators. But it pained me to say it, but it's just not enough. Those among us who are in the public eye, those among us who are able to communicate with a certain power and style, those of us who are allowed to make an occasional Viking raid into the establishment media, we're too few. And the available forms that do give us publicity are hostile to us. If we're going to advocate for European Americans, and again, God bless all the organizations who do it on behalf of the other races. I think that they should absolutely have the right to exist. Unlike, and they don't extend that, they don't reciprocate that courtesy to us. I don't want to dispossess anyone. I want everyone to live and to prosper. I think everyone should have their spokesman, and that extends to my people too. But if we're going to advocate for our people, then we're not going to get help from the media. And I don't mean to say that we shouldn't try to get time in front of TV cameras and behind radio microphones. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't lobby and pressure politicians. We should. We should pursue aggressively any and all avenues to answer our critics, to spread our message, and legislate our principles. But I think that to a certain extent, we need to rethink the focus of our efforts. And I'm not talking about us here in the political cesspool so much as just in general across the board, which, and these efforts for far too long have consisted mainly of making a display of the shameful and shameless and hypocritical behavior of the so-called minority groups, and the exposing the Machiavellian connivings of the so-called dual citizens who have a disproportionate amount of power in this country. Those efforts, they serve an important function. And we should always be willing, whether we're right or wrong, and I certainly think we're right, but we should always have the opportunity to put forth well-reasoned arguments into the court of public opinion. And all of this, pointing out these facts, they serve an important function. And thanks to them, no one can doubt or deny that the typical outrageous and barbaric and violent behavior that comes in certain areas, that comes with certain areas and certain people, are incompatible with European-American culture. And I said this once on CNN, and I think you look around at the world, and you'd be hard-pressed to call me a liar, but you can't have a first-world nation with a third world population. It doesn't work. You look at all the first world nations, they have something in common. You look at all the third world nations, they have something in common, but it's the thing that we dare not speak of in polite circles. But we're very good at observing and analyzing these things. But it seems that the final punctuation of our postings and comments, especially of those of us who do a lot of work on the internet and online, is something to the effect of, it's disgusting, it's awful, it's unacceptable, and that's the end of it. Our readers and our listeners go away with raised blood pressure and, I fear, a more acute sense of powerlessness. And with that being said, I'm going to stop there and then get to something that I hope will be on the lines of solutions. So stay tuned for the conclusion of the remarks I gave here at the AMRIN conference. I'm giving them to you again on the radio right now. Stay tuned.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right? And he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him. And believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten the free people to be knowledgeable with current, important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
America has lost her way, lost her mooring, forgotten her direction. What once protected us from leftist theories and cloud-born wish lists of egalitarian quacks and crackpots was that our principles and values were grounded on experience, what actually worked, as settlers built new political societies from scratch, from the ground up. America was based on personal responsibility, our right to manage our own affairs without the dictation of central planners or a distant bureaucracy. But we're losing that foundation. We're losing our liberty. At www.truthbasedlogic.com, we offer arguments for which the enemies of traditional America have no answers. TruthBasedLogic.com exists to help us better understand, defend, and restore the heritage we are losing.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back. I, for the last couple of segments here, have been revisiting the remarks that I delivered today to the 2012 American Renaissance Conference. I'm still here in the hotel room while the banquet progresses without me downstairs, bringing you this show, and there's no place I would rather be. It's always a blessing to be able to come here every Saturday night. I count my blessings because I love doing this show, and y'all make it possible. But we're revisiting now the talk that I gave today. And, of course, again, I was brought in to talk about a winning mindset for effective advocacy and how subject mindset intersects with the work that I've been able to do on the airwaves. And another thing that I told the people was that they needed to be reminded of the importance of having heroes, real heroes, people we can try to emulate in our own lives. And certainly I have mine, being a Southerner, and more specifically, being a Tennessean, born and raised here. I tend to gravitate first towards the heroes who have called my state their home. Men like President Andrew Jackson, who won the Battle of New Orleans and killed the bank. Davy Crockett, a man who left Congress to face overwhelming odds and certain death in defense of his principles and defense of his people at the Alamo. And, of course, a fellow Memphian, Nathan Bedford Forrest, a wealthy businessman who volunteered for service. I mean, could you imagine a multimillionaire in today's society enlisting as a private like Nathan Bedford Forrest did, despite being a self-made millionaire? Volunteered for service and enlisted in the Confederate Army as a soldier of the lowest rank. And then, with not only no military training, he didn't even have a formal education, much less military training, but still he rose to become one of the greatest tacticians in the history of warfare. Andrew Jackson, Davy Crockett, Nathan Bedford Forrest, all Tennessee. What happened to the nation that used to produce men like that? Well, a lot happened, not the least of which is that we got fat and we got lazy. We decided that even though the sacrifices we may have to make in terms of suffering unfair character assassination and defamation, even though that pales in comparison to the sacrifices made by those men and many other of our ancestors, we'd rather give away our inheritance than be called the R word. And of course, that's what my book is all about, Racism Schmacism. You know, I truly have no hatred in my heart for anybody. I get frustrated sometimes, and I certainly get upset at some of the injustices that I believe that we have to face. But, you know, if someone asks me, and this is the God's honest truth, if someone, you know, I have no hatred in my heart for even my biggest detractors. I mean, people would think, you know, you look at the vicious and hysterical attacks that have been levied against this show over the years by the folks at the Southern Poverty Law Center and these other left-wing attack dog groups. But you know what? I don't hate them. I really don't. I don't hate anybody. I don't think, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on the radio. Anybody who knows me knows this is true. I just don't believe that I have the capacity to hate anybody. I don't hate people that don't look like me. But at the same time, I don't love anybody as much as I love my own family, my own culture, my own heritage. And I think that it's a unique culture and a good culture, and it should be preserved. And we ought to have the right to go out and fight for it, not at the expense of anyone else, but certainly not at our expense either. And our people, despite knowing the truth, we've accepted and become guilt-ridden over the grievances that non-whites pretend to have without demanding gratitude for all of the immeasurable contributions that whites have given to the world. Slavery was a bad thing, but you know what? Whites ended it. The contributions that we've made in science and medicine benefit all of humanity. If you had a scale and you put the things that whites have done over the course of recorded history that non-whites are upset about, and then the things that whites have done that everyone has benefited from, all of the inventions and technological advancements, I think the good outweighs the bad 100-1. And, you know, the same genes that animated men like Jackson, Crockett, and Forrest, and so many others, they're still there within us. They're lying dormant within our people, just waiting to be stimulated. And granted, I'm not suggesting that it's possible for me or for you or for anyone else to go out there and accomplish feats on the level of those men that I've used as examples today. But you don't have to do superhuman things like fight at the Alamo, become president, to be a hero. You can be a hero every day in your home and in your local community. You can be a hero by being a, and I said this specifically to the men today, because at any of these political conferences, men outnumber the women 10 to 1 or more. But I said, you know, specifically to the men, you can be a hero by doing the simple things, like being a good husband, a good father, a good brother, and a good son. Walking with your shoulders squared, looking people in the eye, greeting them with a firm handshake, and when asked, telling them the truth in love. I don't know, you know, not everybody can do what I've been able to do and what I've been lucky enough to do here on the radio. And I can't do things that other people are in a position to do. You know, you best know where you are in your life and what opportunities are there. You will have to open those doors and apply them. And that's, I think, what our show, what I've always wanted our show at least to be about. It's about empowering the listeners. Sure, we want to give them the information, and a lot of times that information isn't good news. But we also want to encourage them. And I want to point out to them the doors of opportunity. The political cesspool, I hope, to an extent, is about the audience. You know, that's what it's always meant to be about. It's about our people, and it works. You know, time and time again, I've gotten emails and snail mail from listeners both here in America and abroad telling us how they've decided to run for local office, to go to law school, to throw away their television set, to pull their kids out of public school and to homeschool them, as I was homeschooled, and decided to get married and have a family. I mean, this is modern-day heroism, and it's also effective advocacy. You lead by that example. You lead by principle. Be a hero to your family, your immediate family, obviously, you know who they are, and to your extended family, and I think that our race, our tribe, our creed, that is our extended family. And we should always look after their best interests first, just like you would look after the interests of your family first, but that doesn't mean that anyone else has to be put down. In any healthy home, you love your child more than you love the neighbor's child, but you don't hate your neighbor's child. And because you look after to provide for your child first, doesn't mean you want to see your neighbor's child starve. And unfortunately, that's something, you know, politically that we're faced with when we go out and we advocate for European Americans. And it's simply untrue. But when our people love who they are and they're proud of who they are, and they should be proud of who we are, we can be an effective bunch. I told you about the time that we sent Al Sharpton packing. In 2007, as we all remember, the Senate was poised to approve George W. Bush's Comprehensive Immigration Reform Act, which was an amnesty bill that included a one-block-long road to citizenship for the millions of illegal aliens in the country. But the day before the vote, ordinary folks, just like those who make up this audience, they melted down the Senate phone bank, and they stopped that bill. And just this week, we're seeing Reverend Ted Pike obviously leading the charge here of getting the information out, but we're seeing that advertisers are bailing out on the primetime ABC show, Good Christian, you-know-what, female dogs. The advertisers are leaving because good and decent people are being heroes by taking quiet action, and you can bet that that it's being effective. You can bet that the people that are contacting ABC to protest GCB are on our side, even if it's implicitly so. As I said earlier, the task of what we have in front of us is too big just for those who are considered to be leaders or guiding lights. It's in cataloging the outrages that we face just isn't enough either. Most of our people, including the self-proclaimed liberals who live in their gated suburban enclaves, know just how bad multiculturalism is. You come here, you be an American, you be a traditional American, and you embrace what America's all about. You know, I think even our most outspoken detractors display self-consciousness, the self-consciousness that they have in their own arguments when they issue these hysterical and relentless attacks. If our thinking is so obviously wrong and so transparently ignorant, then what's their worry? But folks, we need to remember to remind ourselves and our friends and family just how good we are, and that we could and should and, in fact, must take on the task of being politically active. These are the best advocates that we can have, and we need them to know that contending for themselves, loving themselves, is a generational endeavor. And that, I think, is the winning mindset for effective advocacy. Tell the truth in love, let the truth be told, and as I said today in closing, for goodness sake, I know we all have bills to pay, but no one should pass up an opportunity to support the organizations that are out there fighting on the front lines on their behalf, on your behalf. Liberty News Radio is one of them. Support this network that makes the radio show that we do here possible. Support our work, American Renaissance, and your organization of choice. It's not asking too much to donate, just a little bit of your money. It's needed, it's deserved, it's appreciated. You know how to donate to us. We'd appreciate it. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the third hour in just a bit.